Good afternoon. Calling the State Affairs Committee to order at 3:09 p.m. Thursday, February 1st in the Max Greenberg Room. Will the Secretary please call the roll?
Representative Johnson?
Here.
Representative Tuck?
Here.
Representative Josephson, alternate. Representative Knopf? Representative Wolf?
Here.
Representative Kopp, alternate. Representative Ledoux? Representative Burke?
Here.
Chair Price
Thompson. Here. And with five members present, we have a quorum to conduct business. And as a reminder, please silence any cell phones that you might have in the audience as well as on the committee. Thank you, Martha and Eileen, today for facilitating the meeting. And two items on today's agenda, House Bill 293, relating to background checks and police training, and HJR 29, New Authorization of Secure Rural Schools Act. This is the second hearing for both pieces of legislation. It's my intention, if it's also the will of the committee, to take action on HJR 29 today. We will hold HB 293 for further action, perhaps next week from the committee. Starting with HB 293, would the department or agency please come forward? And today I'd like to see if the committee has further questions. And first, I'd like to recognize Representative Ledoux joined us at 3:10. Mr. Griffiths, welcome. And if to frame things as I understand them, where we left this bill last time, this is a piece of legislation that relates exclusively to background checks or facilitating background checks for village police officers in Alaska.
That is correct.
Thank you, Mr. Griffiths. So if that helps sort of frame committee question, we can get right back at it. Are there questions from the committee?
Are there any other questions, or would you like me to go over the written response that we gave to the ones that were previously submitted? If there's any questions on those, perhaps? Or
I don't see any questions, so perhaps go ahead with a review of written responses, Mr. Griffiths.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We were asked to comment on the trends in law enforcement officers, and I've given you a chart that best explains those, and I've written a little bit of editorial comment in there, roughly drawing your attention to the fact that while overall the state's number of law enforcement officers increased, that was almost exclusively due to the increase in size of the Anchorage Police Department. If you removed them from the equation, we lost, I think it's 42 officers, something like that. It's in the letter. I'm sorry. I'm going to read it to you again. We were also asked to comment on village police officers and try to estimate the numbers of those. Again, in our records, we track and are tracking 11 village police officers, and I should say only 11 village police officers, because we know, incidentally, that there are many more of them out there. They're just not being reported to us, and presumably this is part of the problem. They're also not getting background checks, so it's why we're here today. And
if I may interrupt really quickly, can you also identify yourself for the record?
Thank you for the reminder, Representative Christ Tompkins. Bob Griffiths. I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Police Standards Council. And finally, we were asked to comment on whether or not a statutory change may be necessary in order to empower the municipalities to run their own background checks. And the reality is that their authority to do so already resides within Title 29. It's not a matter of the authority to do it. It's a matter of them having the resources to do it. And I delineated in the letter to you some of the required steps for them to comply with the state law to be able to get access to that information. It is, for a small town, a very daunting task to do that, and not without some cost. And that's where we're here today, because our proposal is to allow us to facilitate those fingerprint-based background checks for these agencies so that they can avoid those costs and still get the information that they need.
And Mr. Griffiths, I want to quickly clarify, do the members of the committee have the written response that you referenced?
And I got one from AML. I don't
yeah. AML. Okay. Maybe we can take a quick idea just to sort this out.
Of that.
I just got one from...
Okay. Going back on the record, I think while we get copies of the department's written response distributed to members of the committee, jump to the next bill on the agenda, and we'll circle back to this one later. HR 23 and Mr. Brees, come forward. And so we had the presentation of this joint resolution on Tuesday relating to the Secure Rural Schools Act. Are there any further questions from the committee on this piece of legislation?
If I may, the chair, you said HDR 23, it's HDR 29.
Excuse me, thank you.
That's okay. And I'd like to direct the committee members, you should have in your packet that was mailed to you or emailed to you additional support emails and letters from the communities that are affected by this. I just want to make sure everyone was aware of that input.
Great, thank you. And if you wouldn't mind, could you put yourself on the record?
Sorry. My name is Daryl Brees, staff representative George Rusher.
Thank you. Well, thank you for the additional supporting materials. Seeing no additional questions from the committee, I might go to public testimony at this time. I'll start with testimony in the room and open public testimony. Is there any testimony in the room for HJR 29? Please put yourself on the record and present your testimony.
Yeah, Mayor Clay Copeland on behalf of the City of Cordova, and thank you, Chairman Kreis Tompkins and committee for this resolution. The City of Cordova is surrounded by the beautiful Chugach National Forest, and while the forest provides fantastic, really world-class subsistence and recreational opportunities for our community, there are very limited economic opportunities from the forest that contribute to our economy. So the community of Cordova invests very heavily in our educational system, which is nationally recognized both at the elementary and high school levels. And we have funded the Cordova School District at the cap for many years until this last year. And so as we struggle to make ends meet in our community and accommodate some of the opportunities we have, such as expanding our harbor to provide land and waterfront to the businesses and new fisheries that are looking for land and opportunities there, school funding has never been more important for our community. Through this program has never been more important than it is right now. So we really appreciate the support of the legislature in sending this message back to DC and advocating for our communities. Thank you very much.
Thank you
for this opportunity to testify.
Any questions from the committee for Mr. Copeland? Thank you for taking time. Any further? Yes, Ms. Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I have a question for Daryl or somebody who can answer it.
Would it be all right if we circle back after public testimony closed?
Oh, public testimony.
Yeah, yeah. No. That's all right. There's actually a couple of testifiers on the phone right now. We'll start in Anchorage with Kathy Wasserman with AML. Kathy, if you can hear us, can put yourself on the record and present your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Kathy Wasserman, Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League. I have had this job for about 15 years, and I've been actively working on timber receipts or secure rural school funding for years. I'd like to thank Representative Rauscher and Newman for submitting this resolution. For many years, I have attempted to get legislators to help us fund or to help lobby or at least advocate for this issue, as we knew a number of years ago that it was probably going to dry up. In Southeast Alaska alone, we have seen the loss of almost $75 million per year that came to just Southeast municipalities because of timber receipts and stumpage fees. In the Chugach, it's over $2 million a year. And that's an awful lot of money that that municipalities at some point will have to backfill somewhere. And at this point, I don't know where that is. This money mostly went for schools, as it is secure funding for rural schools. And it's been expired for 2 years. And for years, I tried to get some of the legislatures to realize it was going to go away. I hope it's not too late, because now the act has to be rewritten. And, of course, the chances of that happening are slimmer than just continuing an act. But I go back to D.C. twice a year on simply rural funding for secure funding for rural schools, and I would hope that the legislature would be willing to do more than submit a resolution, but help us out more and more with letters to different congressmen, because there are a number of congressmen from states that do not receive secure funding for rural schools who would love to see this end, because they don't feel it, because it doesn't impact them. But it is impacting the western states in a huge way. So I would be utterly shocked that we would have to have too many hearings on this resolution. This helps municipalities and certainly helps take some of the heat off the legislature. So I would hope that everyone would just vote this through to the next committee. Thank you. Thank you for the chance to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Wasserman. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you for taking the time to testify, especially with your travel schedule. I know that was up in the air, and your record of service to small coastal communities. Next in the queue, from SITCA, Mary Wegner. Ms. Wegner, Superintendent Wegner, if you can put yourself on the record and present your testimony, HJR 29, we'd be grateful.
Hello, Chair Christ Tompkins and members of the House State Affairs Committee. My name is Dr. Mary Wegner, and as Representative Christ Tompkins mentioned, I am the superintendent of the SITCA School District. I'm testifying today in support of HJR 29, Reauthorize Secure Rural Schools Act. First of all, I want to thank you for your support in advocating for the reauthorization of the Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Act of 2000. As you know, secure rural schools funding is critically important to school districts, including the SITCA School District, as well as many other school districts around Alaska. The SITCA School District resides in the SITCA Borough, of which 95% is comprised of Tongass National Forest. Around Alaska, local municipalities have a limited ability to generate local tax revenue to support schools and roads due to the surrounding national forests, which is why it is so imperative that this act is immediately reauthorized and funded. The loss of secure rural schools funding places an onerous burden upon our local citizenry that cannot be ameliorated without federal assistance. In your advocacy on behalf of the reauthorization of secure rural schools, please seek a long-term reauthorization of the legislation, as failure to do so has the potential to wreak long-term damage on public education in SITCA and in communities across the state and nation. The limits imposed by national forests are a reality every year, which is why authorization is critical every year. Having secure rural schools funding as a revenue source in the SITCA School District's FY19 budget would greatly help us to save teacher jobs. Providing an excellent education to every student every day requires quality teachers combined with a culturally responsive learning environment with targeted instruction to meet a student's individual learning needs. All of which helps us to live the three commitments of Alaska's Education Challenge, which are increasing student success, cultivating safety and well-being, and supporting responsible and reflective learners. We are facing a budget deficit that is 12% of our total general fund budget this year, and we need this federal funding to keep our talented teachers. Thank you for taking my testimony, and thank you for your commitment to public education in Alaska. I hope you will urge the U.S. Congress to reauthorize the Secure Rural Schools Act.
Thank you, Dr. Wegner. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you so much for taking the time today. And seeing no other testimony online or in the room, I'm going to close public testimony on HJR 29. And that takes the joint resolution back before the committee, and I believe there's a question for Representative Wolf for the sponsor staff. And speaking of the sponsor, I'd like to recognize Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question, and I'm just sort of curious, all these different numbers ranging from 1.2 million to Valdez or 20,000 to Mat-Su. It's obviously based on previous harvest of timber, or what's that number? How's that number calculated?
I don't know the exact formula. I can't explain it to you in detail, but it's based on the potential impact of the population. I believe it was the superintendent from Sitka who mentioned the lack of ability for economic development because you're surrounded by a national forest. Plays into the fact as well. Because if you look at Anchorage, which is on the list, has land and room to expand and for economic growth there, but a community like Sitka, which is surrounded totally by Tongass, doesn't have that opportunity for expanding into other economic growths, and that plays into the factor of the calculation as well. So there's a lot of moving parts and levers that are within the federal statute that determine how much money goes to each community, and the population in the school district figured into it as well. It's a rather elaborate calculation, and I wish it was something easy, but it's not.
Okay, thanks.
And if you wouldn't mind, could you put yourself on the record?
I'm sorry. Darrell Bree, staff representative, George Rauscher.
Follow up?
I was just sort of curious. But
Representative Ledoux.
So does anybody know what the politics behind failing to reauthorize this? Was there a bill introduced to reauthorize it, which passed one house or no houses, or what happened there? Did it just fall between the cracks?
Through the chair, Darrell Brees again. That's a question better asked of those in D.C. than of me, as far as what the politics were. There was a bill to reintroduce it before the 115th legislature or Congress that we're in now, in the 114th Congress, and why it didn't pass is a question for those who are down in D.C. rather than on me here.
Follow up. Do you know whether it expired in 2015? Do you know whether there was a bill that was introduced prior to its ending?
There was.
And did it follow up?
Follow up.
And did it pass either house?
It did not.
And do you know who, follow up? Do you know who introduced it?
I don't have that information with me right now. I can get it back to you.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Seeing none, I believe there's an amendment before us.
I move amendment number one.
Thank you, Representative Wohl. And amendment number one quick at ease. Representative Tug, put that on the record. And I can speak briefly to amendment number one, having conferred with the sponsor's office. This recognizes that the presiding agency for the U.S. Forest Service is the Department of Agriculture, and among the recipients to be included, presumably, should be the Secretary of Agriculture as well, getting the word out to everyone who is relevant. I guess should have objected to the amendment, but I will ask and see if there's other objection to amendment number one to HGR 29. Object to for discussion?
I have a question on process. I might want to object if I get the proper answer to my question.
Yeah, I will object to discussion, or for purposes of discussion, to amendment number one. Representative Johnson.
Okay, so if we amend the bill, does it become a committee bill then? Or does it stay George's, or Representative Rauscher's bill? I mean, I understand it's a resolution.
With this amendment, it would remain Representative Rauscher's legislation.
Okay. Through the chair, just for clarification, it would become a committee substitute for HJR 29. So the committee it made changes to it within committee, so it becomes a committee substitute for the actual bill, but the bill is still ours, sponsored of Representative Rauscher.
And follow-up question, Representative Johnson?
No, I'm still not entirely clear, but...
Representative Ledoux?
Okay, maybe I can try to, because you look sort of perplexed.
I look very probably if what I'm thinking is showing, yes.
So when a bill is amended in committee, you end up with a committee substitute, but the sponsor still stays the same. It doesn't become a committee bill unless it's been introduced by the committee. So this is still a bill which will be read as sponsored by Representative Rauscher, as opposed to a bill that sponsor is House State Affairs. Does that clarify things? And
I understand. I was just wondering if it was a committee substitute, committee bill, or so on, by the amendment.
Any further questions on amendment number one? Representative Rauscher, comment?
For the sake of discussion, we're happy with the amendment, and we're glad for having it. Thank you.
I will remove my objection for purposes of discussion. Is there further objection to amendment number one? Seeing and hearing none, amendment number one to HJR 29 passes. That takes the legislation back before the committee as a whole, as amended. Committee discussion on HJR 29, one way or another. Representative Birch, good bill. I have the same comment. Is there a motion? Madam Vice Chair.
I move HJR 29 version 30-LS1116/A from committee as amended, with individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal note dated January 26, 2018.
Seeing and hearing no objection, HJR 29 as amended moves from committee. Thank you, Representative Rauscher.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.
With that bill discharged, that takes us back to the original main feature, HB 293. And apologies to the committee. Inadvertently, the December 26th letter was copied. So you have two copies of that instead of the January 26th and January 31st letters. But that has now been circulated before the committee. Thank you, Mr. Griffiths, for your patience. I know some members have had the opportunity to read through it. Representative Birch, open up with a question.
Yeah, I just I wanted to thank the testifier for the complete and thorough response here. This is way more than I expected in a very brief amount of time, and it's very comprehensive, speaks exactly to the questions I had raised earlier and many of us had earlier, and I appreciate the detail and the information. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pretty good response. Thank you. So my question is to the chair. APSC is just a standards council. You don't do any training. But you do the background checks. Is that great? Or do you just create the criteria? I don't know enough about APSC. Can you help me out there briefly?
Yes, sir. Through the chair, Mr. Representative Knopp, APSC does facilitate training, I think would be the best way of doing it. We regulate training. We set standards for it. We certify trainers, and we certify training programs. And when funding allows, we actually assist in funding those training events, whether it's funding the officers themselves to attend or whether it's sponsoring the actual delivery of the training in a venue where as many people as possible can attend it. So I think that addresses part of your question. The other part of your question, I think, had to do with more of what do we do in general. And in general, the council sets the standards pursuant to the statutes, and those standards cover the minimum qualifications for police officer, correctional officer, municipal corrections officer, probation and parole officers. So all of those have their own set of standards based on the requirements that the council has mandated. Over the years, they've modified them many, many times. And part of the process and part of the standards is that the, in every one of those categories, an individual has to pass a fingerprint-based background check to verify identity and also to assure that they don't have criminal convictions that might be disqualifying. And those disqualifiers are actually in regulation. So if, for example, if you've got a felony conviction within the last 10 years, you're precluded from certification.
Follow up.
Thank you for that. So then you also, I think you referenced yesterday, you also engage in recruitment, trainee recruitment maybe? Did you indicate that as well? You said something about it thwarts your efforts towards recruitment. So
well, part of what we're forced to do, I shouldn't say forced to do it, we regard it as part of our mission, Representative Knopp through the chair, and that is that we support recruitment for village police officers and all police officers. On our website, we routinely post all the vacancies in the state. When we get inquiries from out-of-state officers, we direct them to certain agencies based on things they tell us about where they may want to work in the state or what their experience is, and we try to help them match that up to recruitment efforts that are ongoing. But more importantly, I think for the small villages, we try as best we can to educate the officials within those communities about the process that they can follow to recruit and attract candidates, and then to go through a vetting process to make sure they meet the minimum criteria.
One more follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So then in your letter here, so I guess what I'm curious about, so you talked about 11 communities now that have officers and 123 other incorporated rural communities who are eligible to hire village. So I think my last final question will be, if this is passed, is this a mandate on them? Will they have to fingerprint and background check? I mean, right now I guess they can without it, but will it be a mandate for them communities? And so I go there because if they don't have it now and you're trying to incentivize or recruit, whatever the issue may be, is there going to be any fallout kickback from a mandate, I guess, is kind of where I'm fishing for.
Well, Representative Knopp, through the chair, we currently regard it as a mandate now that they have to do it. The problem is we're getting lack of compliance with that regulation. So if you do adopt this bill as it's currently drafted, it would place the requirement for certification to have a fingerprint-based background check in statute rather than regulation. So it would, in fact, mandate that, but no more real effect than we currently have.
One more? But now, when we talked about the VPOs yesterday, though, I mean, you currently are able to, the communities are able to employ some of them now without, so they do have some protection. And so, and it may be a thought way out there, but I'm just wondering, at some point when you go and you tell them, now you got to do a background check and fingerprinting, they may say, no, I'm not, and then we leave them without any. So is that a possibility or not for the other 123 as we go forward?
Representative Knopp, through the chair, I don't think it's any more of a possibility if the bill were passed than it currently exists today. They routinely are hiring and recruiting and retaining folks without certifying them and without notifying us, and they just run at risk civilly, and that's their choice.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions from the committee? Nope. I would like to concur. Very helpful written response. Thank you. Barring other questions from the committee on HB 293, our office will be in touch with an amendment deadline and then in the future, and then we can take action as a committee, if that's the will of the committee, perhaps next week or thereafter. I do want to get to public testimony on HB 293, which was noticed today, and then I think that will conclude our business for today. So with that, I'm going to open public testimony for HB 293, and I see online William McKillican, Chief of Police of Hoonah Police Department. and I hope the name that I'm reading is accurate, but if you could put yourself on the record and present your testimony, we would appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Once again, William McKillican. I'm the Chief of Police and Director of Public Safety in Ahuna, Alaska.
Thank you. Please present your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to first thank the committee for allowing me to appear on behalf of Senate Bill 293. As I stated earlier, my name is William McKillican. I'm the Chief of Police and Director of Public Safety in the city of Ahuna. I've been a police officer for 17 years and hold an advanced police officer certification and have served in nearly every sworn position within a modern police department. I've worked in small, remote, rural Alaska communities such as Fort Yukon to larger communities like Fairbanks, and hope I can provide you with my experience and challenges from a wide perspective. The Alaska Police Standards Council has set, produced, and maintained the highest but achievable standards of performance to our state's law enforcement professionals. They determine certification and training eligibilities, and in some cases revoke those certifications in cases of misconduct. They develop, monitor, and revise training and training requirements, and continually monitor compliance with current regulation and legislation. Additionally, to show that APSC is not just the hard-nosed gatekeeper, they have provided agencies across Alaska with assistance in obtaining pre-employment polygraph, psychological testing for officer candidates who have funded specialized and advanced training for departments and assisted academies and departments with funding to meet basic training requirements. Here at the Ahuna Department of Public Safety, a rural community of just over 800 permanent residents and off-the-stage road system, there is not an officer employee, past or present, that has not benefited in some way from this to improve myself. More importantly, it is our state citizens that see the most benefit from producing some of the finest law enforcement professionals in the nation. As all of you are aware, the state's budget shortfalls have had a grave impact on the small communities of Alaska. Since taking office, I've seen local funding resources dwindle to the point where I've been forced to reduce staffing and service levels. The ability to merely maintain the department's necessary equipment and vehicles alone has been a leadership challenge. With these challenges, and rightly expected, we have not seen a reduction in state standards and requirements for our agencies. Like all law enforcement agencies in Alaska, we are required to maintain access and clearance to the Alaska Public Safety Information Network, or APSIN, and the National Crime Information Center, or NCIC. If we want access to any information in the system, such as criminal history, driving history, wants, warrants, etc., or if we need to submit fingerprints from prospective officers' background checks, these systems provide officers with critical information to assist investigations, alert officers to dangers while they're in the field, and provide important background information for agencies on potential recruit officers. For agencies in medium or large cities or communities, these tasks do not present the challenges as it does in smaller communities like Ahuna. Annual fees, computers, software, network connectivity, monthly reporting requirements, internet connections, to name a few, force me to make decisions that increase risk and liability. Because of reduced staffing levels and retention challenges, maintaining these systems in Ahuna have been difficult. Sending staff out of town for training requirements to assume terminal agency coordinator duties and responsibilities is an additional expense that's been a burden. Last year, our agency experienced not only the loss of our terminal, but our absent coordinator as well. For many years, her experience and knowledge kept our system running. For the past 12 months, we have struggled to replace our terminal and provide the necessary training for our staff to maintain the APSIN and NCIC standards. APSC provides standards on vetting potential police, potential officer hires, along with recruits who pave their own way through the academies. To ensure our state maintains the highest but achievable standards, it is my belief that APSC should be granted the ability to obtain the access to apps and NCIC systems to conduct these background checks. The ability for agencies to call on APSC for assistance in this area is an enormous benefit to agencies like CUNA. As Chief of Police in a rural community, I strongly support this legislation and feel it is necessary for APSC to provide critical support to rural justice initiatives and the Governor's Public Safety Action Plan. I hope you will look favorably on House Bill 293 and assist APSC and the law enforcement agencies of our state in maintaining and producing some of the highest caliber law enforcement professionals in our nation. I would like to make myself available to the committee at this time if you have any questions. Thank you for the opportunity to address the House State Affairs Committee.
Thank you, Mr. McKillican. There's a question from Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chief, I just wanted to thank you for some very well considered, very well thought out testimony, and I frankly I couldn't agree more. I am curious, though, Chief. We've got a listing we just received here earlier this evening. It indicates that you have an APSC certified staff of four, down from five in 2015. Is that about right? That's your certified staff, correct?
That is correct, sir.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, do you have? I've got an iPhone in my hand that uses a thumbprint to open itself up. Do you have the capacity or the technology to do fingerprints? Not so much the research, but I mean, can you take fingerprints in HUNA and then transmit them somehow? And I'm just not sure what the technology has evolved to as far as for remote capability.
Yes, sir, through the chair, obviously. We have the ability to take fingerprints now. We have always met this standard that has been outlined by the state and APSC's requirements. Our biggest challenge is going to be going forward from this point. Like I mentioned in my testimony, based on these current challenges we've just faced, my next potential hire is going to be, I'm going to have to actually make another very, very difficult decision. Do I meet the requirements that has been laid in front of me by the legislation, or do I become one of those other agencies that unfortunately has taken upon themselves to take on that liability and not report? That is the last thing that I want to do. So. And that's why I'm testifying today, because I'm in favor of this House bill.
I agree, and very much appreciate your comments and testimony. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Representative Birch. Any further questions from the committee? Thank you, Chief McKillican, for your service. I take that back. Catherine Monfreda with DPS, you're listed in the queue as yes for testimony. Do you have testimony on this legislation, or are you merely here for questions?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just here for questions.
Thank you. I see no other testimony online, and I will open up to any testimony in the room for HB 293. Seeing no testimony in the room, I'm going to close public testimony at this time, hold this bill for future date to be determined. Amendment deadline will be forthcoming from my office, and thank you, Eileen and Martha, for facilitating today. Next meeting is Tuesday, February 6th, and the State Affairs Committee is adjourned at 3:50 p.m.